though.
I want to apologize for the attack. I didn't want it to happen. I thought what you did for Kelly should have counted as a good deed. But others on the council didn't, and they forced my hand, and I'm sorry. I kept the attack as mild as I could, though.
Mild? Abby said, her smile dropping. You call that mild? My dad said he never thought he'd be this disappointed in me in his entire life.
You seriously damaged our relationship with our parents, I said.
Well, yeah, said Noriko. That is the point of our attacks, Maggie. I told you that going in. Anyway, I did my best to minimize it, and now I've apologized, so let's move on.
She straightened up.
Okay. So the super exciting secret you two don't know yet is that you're actually caught up in the middle of the biggest power struggle Nafafa has ever had. Things are changing fast around here, and with your help, I can make sure everything turns out the way it should.
A power struggle over what? Asked Abby.
Territory, said Noriko. And this is important, so pay attention, please. Right now, the four major Nafafa networks each control a different section of North America. The easy way to explain it is to say, I control the right-hand side of the continent, Murray controls the top, Misha controls the bottom, and Ben controls the middle. You might want to close your eyes and picture that.
Oh, no, I say, shaking my head.
No way am I getting Lisa franked again.
Ooh, good save, said Abby, nudging me with her elbow.
Noriko snorted. Oh, come on. That's Misha's trick, not mine. I promise I'm not going to start talking about teal zebras and magenta glitter kittens. You can keep your eyes open, just picture the continent, like I said. Notice anything unaccounted for? I spread out a map in my brain, plugging in the council members where Noriko had said, then nodded.
The left side.
Exactly. And that's because for the entire history of Nafafa, there's never been a functioning network on the West Coast. Until yours.
Abby straightened up too. Wait, for real? She said. How is that possible?
No one's sure, said Noriko. We keep an eye out, obviously, but we've always just assumed scraps of the first sofa never made it that far. You two total novices are officially the first. And according to the Nafafa Charter, that means once you're accepted, you automatically get a seat on the council. And every pillow fort built along the west coast of North America from now on will be under your control. That, Maggie Hetzker, is why your group is a special case. Congratulations.
Abby raised both hands above her head. Woo! She said. Go Camp Pillow Fort!
Huh, I said. Wow!
And after we join, can we add new forts? Abby asked, her eyes wide. As many new forts as we want?
Noriko nodded. After a few weeks of training and orientation, yeah, as many as you want.
Sweet! Abby whapped me on the arm. Mags, it's perfect! I can send tokens to all my friends from camp. And this time next week, we'll have new members all over the state. Plus, one of my friends has family in California, and I bet you anything someone knows some kids up in Vancouver. We can build our own version of Camp Cantaloupe in no time.
Her face was shining with happiness, but I felt like I'd tumbled over the railing and fallen headfirst into one of the vats.
Making friends with the badminton girls in the hub was one thing, but now Abby was talking about opening up our network to every random kid from Camp Cantaloupe? What was wrong with the way things had been? What was wrong with just the two of us?
I swallowed hard. It was finally starting to sink in that what Abby really wanted out of this whole adventure was more time with other people. Other people who weren't me.
Hold on, I said, shoving down my feelings. I could be sad later. Right now, there were critical secret agent issues to address. Like Noriko's offer sounding way too good to possibly be true.
You're saying you and the rest of the council are just going to hand us all this territory and power? What's the catch?
There's no catch, said Noriko. But there is one short, annoying obstacle. And he has a seat on the council.
Ben, I said.
Ben.
Is that Overall Boy? Asked Abby.
Noriko laughed. Huh, that's what Connor calls him. Yeah, Ben's being kind of a roadblock. He wants the West Coast for himself, and he's trying to get you disqualified before you can even complete your task. He's the one who pointed out all the technical violations last night that led to the attack, and the one who wrote the letter.
Called it, I said.
But how could he ever get the West Coast?
Abby asked.
Isn't he in charge of the Midwest Sofa Oval or whatever?
The Great Plains Sofa Circle, said Noriko. Yeah, he is. But Nefaf has been divided over what to do with the West for decades. I mean, it's just been sitting there, cut off, as far as forts are concerned. Do you know how weird it is to be linked up with kids from all over the entire continent, but not have a single pillow fort from California? It's pretty weird. My network and Murray's have always voted to leave the West alone, because honestly, we have enough territory to deal with already. Misha's network wanted it for a while back in the late 1900s, but they don't anymore. But Ben's network has wanted to stretch out to the West Coast this whole entire time, and Ben thinks they've waited long enough. Getting it would make Ben's network bigger and more powerful than any of the others, and I can't let that happen. Partly because, you know, it's Ben, but mostly because my network has always been the biggest and the most fun, and I refuse to be the head of the council who lets that change.
Oof. So much drama and intrigue going on under all these pillows and banners. Didn't these kids know they could have an adventure without it turning into a soap opera?
So stop him, I said. You're in charge, aren't you? I have stopped him, said Noriko. I've blocked Ben over and over. But I turn 13 next month. I'm aging out, and he's been waiting for that exact chance since the minute he joined. Except now we've got you two. In the nick of time. And if we can get you through your good deed test and onto the council before I leave, then all his plans will be shot, and my legacy and Nefafa will be safe.
Abby raised her hand, frowning. Okay, so I get that Ben wants the West, and you won't let him have it, she said. But how does you aging out give him his chance? Can't the next leader just keep blocking him?
Noriko shook her head. That's the main problem right now. The charter says it takes 4 votes to elect someone to run the council. Obviously, I want Misha to get it, and she's the next oldest. But Ben's made it clear the only way he'll vote for anyone but himself is if we agree to let him take over the West Coast first, before we elect a new head. But if we can get your network onto the council, we'll have the 4 votes we need for Misha, and there's nothing he can do to stop it.
Bad luck for Ben, said Abby cheerfully.
Totally, said Noriko. He actually thinks this is all super suspicious. He thinks I set up your network on purpose in order to block him at the last minute. That's why we're sneaking around like this. He's got his spies everywhere. Misha's on distract Ben duty with Sprinkles the puppy right now just so we could have this meeting.
Aww, said Abby. Puppy duty.
Is that why Ben was being so unfriendly when I met him the other day? I asked. Yep, said Noriko. I mean, Ben's never exactly been sweet, but he knows you two turning up could stop his dreams of expansion for good. And he thinks I'm helping you. That's making him an extra grumpy overall boy.
She leaned against the railing, crossing her arms.
So yeah, that's the situation. This has to happen. And I'm sorry to be blunt, but it's pretty clear from all your flailing around that you two can't do this on your own. That's why I've organized everything for you and set up a foolproof, can't-fail good deed. It's a sure thing, and totally doable even though you're grounded. Carolina is putting the finishing touches in place and dropping off instructions in your fort right now.
The roar of the room thundered around us.
But that's cheating, isn't it? I said, blinking. Isn't that exactly what Ben's accusing you of? That's gotta be against the rules. Maybe? Technically? Who knows? Said Noriko. Please don't go quoting regulations at me, Maggie Hetzker. I'm head of the council, and I can tell you half our rules are ridiculous anyway. Take the silver sunglasses.
She tapped her frames.
They're just ordinary sunglasses. We started wearing them when the hub chandelier got brighter bulbs back in the 70s.
It started as a joke, but some Ben-type kid decided they should be a sign of authority, and somehow made it against regulations to even talk about them, like you found out when you asked. Half our rules are completely pointless and entirely weird, and I think that means we can bend them sometimes if we have to. It's not like we're keeping Ben from getting anything he should actually have anyway. We're just maintaining the balance.
Abby caught my eye, her fingers playing with the end of her braid. She arched an eyebrow.
I wasn't certain what that meant, so I raised mine back.
Noriko was watching us. Look, she said, an edge of exasperation in her voice. I don't think this is that hard. This is the part where you decide what you want. Do you want to take the next step and join the big leagues of pillow forts? Or do you want to go back to playing those make-believe games you keep talking about? It seems like an easy choice to me, but maybe I've been wrong about you. I can guarantee your acceptance into Nafafa if you just jump through the hoops and avoid breaking the rules for anything less than a genuine life-or-death emergency for the next couple of days. And remember, if you don't pass the test, we're shutting you down anyway. You'll never do a good enough deed on your own in that time, so this really is your only chance. I'm trying to make it easy on you here. The jangling pipes and coins seemed to grow louder as Noriko finished her speech.
I didn't know what to say. My insides were feeling as tangled as the room around us. Everything had changed. First, Abby wanted to turn the whole West Coast into one giant summer camp reunion. Then Noriko admitted she'd been openly using us, moving us around like pawns in her power games. She had kind of threatened us, too. Didn't her whole argument boil down to, do what I say, or else? And hey, who was she to say we were flailing and couldn't come up with a top-notch good deed in time? We'd just done 3 in one day. We didn't need her shortcuts. We could do it ourselves. And if for some weird reason it didn't work out, well, then fine, we'd lose the links. But I'd still have Abby, and we'd still have our games. And no matter what Noriko said, that sounded just fine to me. It would sting losing Alaska, but this was about principles now. We'd make it into Nafafa on our own, or not have a network at all. I looked over at Abby, who smiled and gave me a single determined nod. This time I understood perfectly. We didn't even have to speak. We are Camp Pillow Fort, that smile and nod were saying. And we can meet this challenge together, just the two of us. I grinned and nodded back. We'll have to think about it, I said to Noriko. There was no point giving her a direct answer just yet. We had plans to make first. Glorious plans.
Of course, said Noriko. I expected that. I've arranged for Carolina to be your audio surveillance officer this afternoon. You'll have a 2-hour window once you're back where you can talk freely.
Great, I said. Thanks. Noriko narrowed her eyes at me, then sighed.
Okay, look, to show you how serious I am, I'll throw in a bonus. Follow my instructions, do this right, and I'll do everything in my power to fix your relationships with your parents. I'll personally make sure they know you weren't responsible, and everything will be like it was before.
You can do that? Asked Abby, her eyes wide.
I'm head of the Council of Nafafa and Chancellor of the Forts of the Eastern Seaboard, said Noriko. Of course I can.
Wow, said Abby. Also, hey, can I ask a totally off-topic question?
Noriko shrugged.
What's that big tank in the corner?
We all looked down.
The big tank in the corner was full of something, but it wasn't coins.
It looked more like... Cheerios, said Noriko. You wouldn't believe how many Cheerios end up falling down the back of sofas. We had to put them somewhere.
Abby whistled, impressed.
She gazed around at the forest of pipes.
So, how does all this work?
Do your good deed, get into Nafafa, and you'll find out, Noriko said. But I'm tired of shouting here. You know where I stand. I'll take you back to your own network, and then you two have a big decision to make.
16.
Leave it to us to wander into a pillow fort civil war, I said as the link closed behind us.
I know, Abby said. It's bizarre. But that hub, it's incredible.
You really didn't describe it well enough. And all those other kids we can hang out with? I can't wait to get into Nefafa now.
She seized the silver envelope waiting in the middle of the floor and ripped it open. Let's see what this maybe technically cheating good deed is.
She cleared her throat and read the letter aloud. Maggie Hetzker and Abby Hernandez, your good deed has been prepared. Please follow these instructions carefully. The blue striped pillow, 2 to the left of the entrance of your hub, has been linked to what we call a partial fort. That means a situation where the pieces needed for a linked fort, pillows, a basic covering, a token, are gathered by accident. This mostly happens on sofas, like the one you encountered when you first linked up to Alaska. The partial we've set up for you today is a tarp and sofa in an alley behind the garbage dump half a mile from your house. And since it's not a formal pillow fort, linking there is totally fine within the Nefafa rules and regulations, even for a network on probation, and even with Ben nosing around. The alley is a mess. The maintenance man who usually takes care of anything dumped there is getting old, and the trash has been piling up. You will clean the alley for him. Link through, clean the alley, talk about doing it later tonight when a regular monitor is on duty, and I'll take the report and spin it up to good deed status. It's important that you do a very thorough job, since the council will judge you on the end result. It'll probably take you a combined 4 to 6 hours of hard work. Sorry about that, but we need it to look convincing. Maggie, Murray says you like spotting problems and asking lots of questions. So you're probably wondering how we've linked the alley to your fort and what the cover story is. The how is we took a postcard from your shoebox and tucked it under the sofa cushions. The cover story is you threw the card away and it got blown out of the recycling truck and ended up in the alley. Talking about that in your fort once the regular monitor is back on duty would be helpful. You could even say that maybe a rat found the postcard and carried it into the sofa to make a nest. I don't think there are any rats in the alley, but there might be. Sorry about that, too. Sincerely, Noriko, head of the Council of Nefafa, Chancellor of the Forts of the Eastern Seaboard.
Really? I said, staring down at the letter. More cleaning? Good thing that's not happening.
What? Said Abby. I think it sounds fine. We can get a start now, come back home for lunch, then finish up tonight. We get accepted tomorrow, Noriko fixes things with our families, and bam, all our problems are solved. She made it pretty convenient.
Wait. Hang on, I said.
Are you saying you want to do this?
Obviously, said Abby.
Wait, are you saying you don't?
Of course!
Abby frowned. Okay, why not?
Why were we even having this conversation?
I held up 3 fingers. I don't want to clean up an old dirty alley. I don't want to get into Nefafa using someone else's maybe technically cheating plan. And I don't want to do what Noriko says just because she tells us to.
Oh. Huh, said Abby. She held up 3 fingers of her own.
Well, I want Noriko to fix things with my dad. I don't mind hard work when it's helping someone. And I don't want to miss out and spend the rest of the summer wondering about all the adventures we could be having if we just went with the flow and got into this Nefafa club when we had the chance. Besides, Noriko's only doing what's best for her network, Mags. There's no reason to take any of this personally.
I felt like my brain had missed a step.
But what about back in the collecting room? That nod, when we agreed not to do this because we could do it ourselves?
What are you talking about? Said Abby.
I was nodding, yes, all right, let's do this. I was agreeing with Noriko.
My insides flipped over. Once again, new Abby had come along and yanked the rug right out from under me.
Huh, okay, I said. Time for a deep, slow breath.
But don't you think it would be better if we brainstormed more good deeds and passed the Nefafa test on our own?
We can do it. We're Camp Pillow Fort.
There's not enough time, Mags. Abby said, shaking her head.
Like Noriko told us, this is our only option.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it is.
Not.
Is.
Not. We glared at each other. Just so I know, are you speaking in code right now? I asked.
No.
And why do you keep thinking that? Because you sound different. I heard a tremor in my voice. Something happened to you this summer.
Yeah, declared Abby. It did. I had a great time at Camp Cantaloupe, and I want to keep that going now that I'm home. And that means getting into Nefafa, and this is how we're doing it. Look, she crossed her arms. Do you have even one new good deed idea? One that's ready to go right now?
I had to shake my head.
See? Sorry if it bugs you, Mags, but we're cleaning up the alley and that's final. No, we're not, I said, indignation flaring up inside me. First Noriko, now my own best friend telling me what to do? No way! I'm head of our network, and I say we're not doing it. Oh, so I automatically have to follow your orders? Abby fired back. Uh-uh. My cat's technically in charge, in case you forgot. And you may be vice director, but you don't order me around.
I spluttered.
What? You're ordering me around! No, you are, said Abby. You're saying I have to do what you say or you won't play with me.
My stomach twisted painfully. This was all going wrong. I'm not saying that, I said slowly. All I'm saying is I want us to come up with our own plan instead of taking Noriko's, like we always used to.
Fine. Then I'll do Noriko's good deed without you, said Abby, shrugging. You can't, I insisted. You can't just decide to split up the group and go with her plan over mine. Mags, you just said you don't have a plan, said Abby. And stop trying to make me your sidekick in all this. Believe it or not, I can have adventures on my own.
So what? You're just going to go off and leave me behind like before?
The words were out of my mouth before I could stop them. There was a thunderously uncomfortable silence. Abby put a hand over her mouth.
Oh, dude, is that what this is about?
Are you still mad about me going away to camp?
No.
Really sounds like it.
Does not.
Yeah, it does. I took a super deep breath and held it, feeling the blood pounding behind my ears.
I'm not mad you went, I said, letting it all out at once and fighting hard to keep my voice steady. I just missed you.
Well, I'm sorry about that, said Abby. But it's not enough reason for me to feel bad about deciding to go.
I blinked away the rainbows in the corners of my eyes.
What? You told me you didn't have a choice. You said your dad made you go since he couldn't get a refund.
Oh, yeah. Abby went very still. Her face flushed dark.
About that.
Her eyes flicked to mine, then away again.
So, actually, I went on purpose. We could have gotten a refund. I could have stayed home. But when my dad asked me if we should cancel after you missed the deadline, I thought about it and decided I really, really wanted to go, even if you couldn't.
My heart stopped dead. The pillows spun around me. For one horrible moment, I honestly thought I was falling through the carpet. I asked the only question I could think of.
Why?
Because I didn't want to miss out, said Abby. There was a plea in her voice. I needed something different this summer, Mags. I just did. I needed to start actually doing things, and not just hang out with you imagining all the time. Your games are great, don't get me wrong, but they're not really my thing anymore, and with middle school coming up... Only I never really figured out a way to tell you, and then camp was starting. She took a deep breath.
Look, I'm sorry if you were sad, truly. Ever since I got back, I've been trying to share as much of camp as I could with you. And I do honestly wish you'd been there, but it's done now. It's over. And I'm not sorry I went.
It sounded like a practiced speech.
But why didn't you tell me? I said around the lump in my throat. Did you think I wouldn't understand or something?
Honestly, said Abby. She left the answer hanging, hovering in the air between us.
Look, I know you're mad, but I said I was sorry, and we can't change it now, so let's just move on.
She tugged at her braid, and a crease appeared between her eyebrows.
And you can ease up on whatever abandoned castaway story you're probably starting in your head. It's not like I'm going to make this a habit or anything. The unfairness of that statement shocked me.
But you're already doing the exact same thing,
I said, jabbing a finger at the silver envelope.
You're choosing to leave me behind again right now.
No, said Abby, firing up. I'm choosing to follow through on something I think is important, and you're choosing not to come. This is exactly why I didn't tell you before, Mags, because you always take everything personally. Not everything I do is about you. She exhaled hard and sat back, slumping against the sofa with her arms crossed. I couldn't speak. I was having trouble breathing. I stared down at one of the pillowcases, my vision going blurry. Anyway, I finally heard her say, we're wasting time. I'm going to the alley. I'm taking Noriko's offer, and I could really use your help. I shook my head. I was not going to cry. Hey, she said, scooching closer and bopping me on the knee. Remember how freaked out you were about the link that led to Joe's at first? And the one to Kelly's? I had to push you there, and it all turned out fine. This is like that. It might sound scary or strange at first, but this is how we're going to make everything okay. Me and you. By our powers combined. Together. Every knot in my stomach clenched. She was trying to get me to rally, but she was only making it worse. She was really saying she hadn't needed me all those other times. And she hadn't needed me when she went away to camp. And she didn't need me now. And maybe I didn't need her either. I shook my head. Abby watched me for a long moment, then reached out and pulled away the blue-striped pillow, revealing a torn and grimy sofa cushion leaning at an angle. Without a word, without even glancing back, she disappeared through the link and shoved it closed behind her. 17. There's no sound in the world quite like the sound of your best friend walking out on you. I'd imagined plenty of awful things in my 11 and a half years of life. Epic disasters, terrible accidents, collisions, storms, floods, and invasions. And I'd always known how to deal with them. I'd always planned and prepared and found a way to make them right. But never once in my entire life had I imagined Abby might leave me. I had no plan for this. Still, there I was, all alone again in my silent, overgrown rat people nest, the fight with Abby bouncing off the pillows and echoing around my brain. I sat up to leave, steadying myself against the pillow Abby had been leaning on. It was still warm. I suddenly remembered how she hugged me the day she came home from camp, and my heart seized up. I fled to the kitchen. The clock ticked as I walked from one side of the floor to the other, smacking at the counters. I yanked open the fridge, making the juice carton and yogurts wobble. There was plenty of good food in there. Abby and I had cleaned out most of the vegetables making the salad for Uncle Joe, but I slammed the fridge shut. I didn't want to think about food if that meant thinking about Abby. I glared around. There was the house phone. What if I called my mom at work? Maybe she could distract me. Except, no, I was grounded and in trouble, and that's what she would want to talk about. Not that I could really tell her why my heart was in tatters. I abandoned the kitchen and went up on the roof. It was hot. The sun was beating down hard on the shingles. I wrapped my arms around my knees, tightened my jaw, took a deep, slow breath, and made a firm decision to stop feeling sad. Choices had been made, lines had been drawn, and there was no point wasting time thinking about it. I was going to sit there, rally, and be fine. I tried thinking about nice things like Matt's arms, Samson's purr, and peach ice cream. Then realized I was staring straight at the same pine tree I'd stared at every day when I was waiting for Abby to come home. Ugh, I said to the tree, the roof, and the whole tangled, broken summer in general. Abby was everywhere around here, and the bright sun was making my eyes water. I needed the opposite of all this. I climbed off the roof and tromped to Alaska. There was a note on the floor outside Fort Orpheus. It was addressed to me. I opened it,
wondering exactly when my life had become a non-stop parade of cards and notes and letters.
Dear Maggie, if you're reading this, it means you're in my cabin and I'm not, which probably means you're mad at me. I know I promised to stay off my foot, but my ankle felt 99% back to normal this morning, and I just couldn't miss doing my field recordings 2 days in a row. Sorry. Love, Uncle Joe.
I rolled my eyes and went to the window. The sky was as heavy and gray as a humpback's belly again, and there was Uncle Joe, stretched out on his back beside his boat with his listening equipment set up around him. Well, at least he hadn't tried to go out on the water. I decided to let him get on with it. I was feeling way too jangly to be good company right then, anyway. Not that I was being very good company for myself. I was totally restless. I stalked around the cabin, opening cupboards, kicking random bits of furniture, and fiddling with the equipment piled on the desk. A switch hooked up to an old speaker was too tempting not to flick. And as it clicked on, a strange, watery, glooping noise filled the room. I frowned, then realized it must be the underwater microphones out in the bay, the same ones Uncle Joe was listening to. The noise felt thick in the air, heavy and heaving through the crackly old equipment. I listened, staring into space. It was seriously hypnotic. I shook myself, switched off the machine, and looked around for something better to distract me. And there was Fort Orpheus, filling the room. I glared at it, and an interesting new idea crept into my brain. What if I just tore it down? What if I yanked off the sheet, scattered the pillows, and drowned the postcard token out in the bay? What would happen then? I'd be stuck. That's what would happen. I'd be trapped in Alaska with Uncle Joe. And right then, that didn't sound bad at all. We could hang out together for the rest of the summer, just the two of us, and I could learn about whales and help Uncle Joe with his research. We would make double-strength cocoa every night after dinner and have huge bonfires on the beach. And when Orpheus showed up, we would publish our findings and the two of us would become famous. And as for Abby, she could keep Camp Pillowfort, keep Nefafa and the Lynx and all the rest of it. She could clean up that alley and take my spot on the council and go around in fancy silver sunglasses, making her own banner and linking in all her Camp Cantaloupe friends and bossing around every West Coast kid unlucky enough to discover a magical pillow fort from then on. Uncle Joe and I would be famous and happy and better off without her. Only, of course, that's not how things would really go. If I did get trapped in Alaska, then Uncle Joe would have to tell my mom I was there, and she would have to buy an expensive ticket to get me home. And Orpheus would probably turn up while Uncle Joe was driving me to the airport, then disappear forever. And Kelly would probably take a turn for the worse while my mom was coming to pick me up. And Abby would never forgive me, and would convince her dad to move, and I'd never see her again, and no one would ever speak to me in middle school, and... I blinked, pulling myself out of the tragedy running in my head. Whoa. I was doing exactly what Abby had said. And if she'd been right about that... Okay, fine. I was doing the thing. But that was just me being me, right? It's not like I was acting on it. I was just planning what I'd do if it did happen. Getting prepared. Trying it on for size. My stomach gave a rumble, and I turned my back on the fort and went to root around in the kitchen. It was all too much to deal with right then. At least making lunch would keep me busy for a bit. There wasn't much to see in the cupboards, just canned soup, plain crackers, and some mismatched dishes. The fridge was worse, with only a carton of coffee creamer, half a jar of applesauce, and a lonely bottle of mustard wobbling all by itself in the door. "Hey there," I said, waving at the mustard. "I know how you feel." My heart twinged as I eyed the uninspiring collection of food. Poor Uncle Joe. Imagine coming in out of the cold and facing this. He'd been really nice about Abby and me hanging around and tearing up his living room, and he'd made us lunch on our first surprise visit. It was time I actually did something nice for him. Luckily, the thing to do was obvious. "Begin Operation Fridge Fix," I announced to the empty kitchen. 5 minutes and one first-class raid on my own fridge later,
I was back with a block of cheddar, a loaf of bread, a jar of pickles, a half-full bottle of ranch dressing, a package of bacon, 6 cups of blueberry yogurt, 7 apples, and a box of cherry popsicles. I was heading back for another round of kitchen pillaging when I bumped into Samson in my fort, nosing around near the link that led to Kelly's. "Oh, no, not you," I said. Samson was my favorite cat in the world, but I was still angry and hurt over his owner. "You need to get back home now, buddy." Samson and his snagglepaw took some convincing, and in the struggle I squashed an elbow into one of the unlinked wall pillows. It toppled, and I suddenly found myself face to face with a green, cracked, leathery-looking pillow that definitely wasn't one of mine. "Ugh, really?" I groaned to the empty fort. "Again?" 18. So there had been a second secret link all along? That would explain another of the mysterious lumps on Nefafa's map of Camp Pillow Fort. I stared at it. The new pillow was sitting one to the left of Kelly's. If Abby had started her search the other day going the opposite direction, we would have found this one first. And then where would we be? Maybe Abby and I wouldn't be fighting. Maybe I wouldn't feel so bad right now. Maybe I wouldn't be alone. It was too late for maybes, though. Abby had gone the other way, charging off on her own like always. And here I was, and... hey, you know what? She wasn't the only one who could go charging into things. Maybe it was my turn. I shoved the pillow hard, sending it flying into the mystery fort. Bright light and bouncy electronic music streamed into Fort McForterson. I had a split second of triumph before the yell hit me. "What the?" Oh, good. Someone was home. Feeling gloriously reckless, I pushed my head and shoulders through the gap and looked around. I was in a bedroom. A teenager's bedroom, judging by the band posters and the clothes on the floor. Oh, and Caitlin, my across-the-street neighbor, jumping up from a desk right in front of me. I froze, assessing the situation. My lower half was still back in Fort McForterson, and my upper half was sticking out of a green fake leather love seat with laundry piled on it. The pillow I'd punched was standing on one side, holding a sheet like a roof over my head. I didn't see any sign of an organized pillow fort. This must have been one of those accidental forts, like Noriko had talked about in her letter. I looked at Caitlin. She looked at me. The bouncy electronic music thumped along on its own. And then... ha! I knew it! Caitlin slapped the desk. I freaking knew it! Hi, I said. What was she talking about? How was that a proper reply to someone bursting out of your sofa?
You're, probably surprised to see me.
Nope.
Nope?
Caitlin shook her head. I knew you were having awesome adventures this summer, Maggie. I told you so, remember? My brain felt just like the rest of me, only halfway there.
Kind of, I said, thinking back to when I rescued Samson from the banner on her ice cream truck.
It felt like years ago. Caitlin came over and plopped down on the floor. So, someone finally started a West Coast network then? She said. The world as I knew it went up, down, inside out, and sideways. Caitlin knew about the Pillow Fort networks? Caitlin?
Then again, why not?
In a world where Abby could walk out on me, anything was possible.
Yeah, I said, scraping together my remaining bits of reality.
I did. We did. But how do you know about that? I moved here from Wisconsin when I was 10, said Caitlin. Before the move, I was in the Great Plains sofa circle. Holy pickle jar, she really did know about Nefafa. But when my network found out where I was going, they made me leave my token behind. I was cut off.
Why didn't they let you just link back there from here? Look at me, casually talking pillow fort theory with a high schooler.
Oh, I argued for that. But my network head said it was against the rules to build a satellite fort in unclaimed territory. And if I tried to smuggle in a token and link in, they would shut me down anyway.
Huh. Seems like they're always doing that.
right? But now tell me everything. You really started your own homegrown network out here?
Yep. Noriko, she's head of the council right now, told us we're the only kids on the West Coast to ever have a network. I couldn't keep a curl of pride out of my voice. It's pretty cool being first. I just can't believe other kids never found scraps of the first sofa and built pillow forts before us.
Caitlin quirked an eyebrow. Oh, they totally did.
What?
I don't know what this Noriko person told you, but my old network head told me all about it while I was trying to convince her to let me stay linked in. She said linkable forts have been popping up here and there on the West Coast ever since the Gold Rush.
The Gold Rush? Seriously?
Sure, said Caitlin. It makes sense. A whole bunch of people moved west for that, bringing their pillows and blankets and things along. Their kids either came with them or showed up later. And ever since then, some random kid on the West Coast occasionally builds a fort that can be linked.
But Noriko and Murray both specifically said we were a special case. They told us we were the first functioning network on the West Coast. Ever.
Okay, then that's the key right there, said Caitlin, pointing. The first functioning network. None of the forts I'm talking about ever actually got linked to others. My old head said accidentally getting the right pieces in place in one fort is hard enough. But having other forts close enough for that fort to start linking and form a network is almost impossible.
Wow, I said. So Abby and I did the impossible.
Looks like, said Caitlin, smiling. Good for you. But speaking of your amazing bestie, where is she? Why are you here all on your own?
Oh, that. Discovering the secret link to Caitlin had almost driven my other problems out of my mind. Now it all came flooding back and then some, along with the ache in my chest. Caitlin leaned against the sofa as I explained the situation.
Ouch, that sounds really hard, she said when I finished. I hope you two can patch it up soon.
I nodded. Me too. And I meant it. I hated being mad at Abby, and I really hated knowing she was mad at me.
Would a mega ultra caramel swizzle cone help? Caitlin asked. I can run out to the truck.
No! Called a voice from Fort McForderson, and I jumped as well as I could as someone behind me whapped me on the leg. Let me in! Said the voice. It was a girl, but it definitely didn't sound like Abby. I scooched over, and first a baseball cap, then a bunch of curly black hair appeared. Carolina? Oof! Carolina squeezed in beside me and looked around grumpily. Hello, Maggie Hetzger, she said. And hello, person named Caitlin who shouldn't be linked in.
Hi, said Caitlin. Nice to meet you. What network are you with? Do you want some ice cream?
I'm not here to make friends, said Carolina. She's with the forts of the Eastern Seaboard, I told Caitlin.
Ooh, Caitlin smiled. Fancy.
Stop it, stop it, stop it, said Carolina, waving her hands. There's no time. You need to get back to your own network, Maggie Hetzger. This fort was accidental, and it's not approved, and my surveillance shift is almost up. If the next kid catches you in here with a teenager, you'll be cut off permanently and then some.
Aw, that's what happened to me, sort of, said Caitlin. It's not fun. You should get going.
I guess so. It had been nice getting to talk things over with someone who mostly understood.
Can I come by again sometime?
No! Cut in Carolina. This link shouldn't even be here. Caitlin's not allowed to be connected to any fort networks at all.
That's true, said Caitlin. We can hang out the normal way, though, Maggie.
Really? Thanks. Carolina was digging furiously through the jeans and skirts and shirts covering the floor around us.
What are you doing? I asked.
Looking for the token!
Caitlin raised her eyebrows. I didn't even ask how we got linked up. What do you think it was, Maggie? I mean, I gave you the ice cream and your mail you dropped, but none of that would do it.
Got it! Cried Carolina, emerging from the clothes pile with a cheap plastic pen in her hand.
Ha! I said. It was my old hypno-ray gun.
I forgot I even gave that to you.
Same, said Caitlin. And look how far you've come since then. We high-fived.
Time to go, Maggie Hetzger, said Carolina. Bye, Caitlin, I said, scooching back to my own fort. Thanks for everything.
Go get him, Tiger,
she called, waving. I waited in Fort McFortersen as Carolina pulled the link shut behind her.
That was close,
she said, tossing the pen back in my arts and crafts corner. She turned to me. I know things are weird between you and Abby Hernandez right now, and that you're attempting a good deed on your own, but please, Maggie Hetzger, try and stay out of trouble.
Huh.
So she knew about the fight. You don't miss anything, do you? I said. Carolina shook her head.
It's my job.
A smile snuck into the corners of her mouth. Plus, I'm training to be the world's greatest secret agent someday.
Oh, I said, sitting up. Oh, me too. That is awesome. We need to talk more about that.
Maybe she could become my new Abby, if things, well, never got back to normal. It was always good to be prepared for the worst. Carolina shrugged.
Follow the rules, get into Nafafa, and maybe we can. But now I have to go.
She yanked a random pillow down, and there was the hub again.
Good luck, Maggie Hetzger.
Bye, I said.
And thank you.
I returned to Alaska. As I crawled out of Fort Orpheus, I realized I was actually feeling better. Hanging out with Caitlin and Carolina had really cheered me up. I headed back to the kitchen and wolfed down a yogurt, admiring my work on Operation Fridge Fix. The fridge really did look 100 times better, and I couldn't wait for Uncle Joe to see it. I went to the window to find him. The weather had taken a turn for the worse. A steady rain was falling, and the wind was kicking up serious whitecaps out on the bay. But Uncle Joe was still out there, lying on the rocks by the shore. Why hadn't he come in? He must have been getting soaked. A kernel of worry dropped into my stomach, and I pulled on a sweater and rain jacket and headed out to check on him.
Hey!
I called, clomping down the steps.
Uncle Joe!
The wet wind threw the words right back at me. I crunched over the beach.
Are you okay?
I hollered. The cold rain pattered on the hood of my jacket. Uncle Joe didn't look up. Why wasn't he answering? And hey, why was all his recording equipment still set up unprotected on the rocks around him? Wait, it wasn't set up. It was tumbled, scattered. I broke into a run, my shoes slipping on the stones. And then I saw his leg, bent out at an ugly angle. And I saw the rain running down his face. His eyes were closed. My heart stopped. He wasn't...
He couldn't be.
I dropped down beside him, my fingers squeezing around his arm, and saw a faint cloud rise from his mouth before the wind whipped it away. I gasped with relief. He was alive, at least, but he was out cold and seriously hurt, and... Oh. My. Cantaloupe. He'd been like this the whole time. While I'd been moping around the cabin, fussing with the fridge, and chatting with Carolina and Caitlin, Uncle Joe had been out here in the freezing rain, desperately needing my help. Forget being left behind from summer camp. Forget fighting with my best friend. I'd never felt worse in my life. But what now? There was no way I could carry him back to the cabin by myself, and I couldn't risk dragging him over the rocks and making his injuries worse. I hugged my arms around my jacket and scanned the icy hills and sky and bay, fighting off a rising panic. I couldn't save him on my own. I needed help. But my go-to help was busy cleaning a dirty alleyway back in Seattle, and might not be speaking to me. I sighed. This was going to be rough, and I was definitely going to have to apologize first. But there was no way around it. I covered Uncle Joe with my sweater and rain jacket and ran shivering back to the cabin. It was time to rally the troops. 19. The afternoon sun was already sliding down the far side of the sky, and all the heat of the day seemed to have crammed itself into the narrow alley behind the dump. It was swelteringly hot. It was also incredibly filthy, packed with overstuffed garbage bags, old paint cans, rotting food, 10 million flies, and Abby, looking tired and grumpy as she pushed at a pile of plastic bottles and cardboard with a broom.
Oh, look who decided to turn up,
she said as I struggled out of the disgusting sofa. What an honor. I bit back a retort, thinking of Uncle Joe lying on the cold ground up in Alaska. I couldn't rescue him alone. Hi, I said. I'm not here to help.
Oh, Peachy, Abby said, dropping her broom and picking up a shovel. Her fancy braid was fraying at the end.
You're not here to help. Well, thank you very much for the visit, Ms. Vice Director. She kicked a tin can at the dumpster against the wall. It struck with a clang, and a huge hairy something came streaking out from under it and disappeared behind the sofa.
That's the rat, by the way, said Abby. There is one. I named it Mr. Chompers. If you screw your eyes up really tight, he almost looks like a moose.
Great. Abby?
I keep thinking about what I would do if he actually turned into one and rescued me back to Camp Cantaloupe.
She stabbed the shovel into the pile at her feet.
Abby! It could happen, you know. I never saw it at camp, so I think the moose owes me and...
Oh, will you shut up about that moose and just let me apologize?
It wasn't how I meant to say it, but there it was.
Abby whirled to face me, looking furious, but I charged ahead. Look, I'm sorry for what I said before, and for trying to control everything, and for treating you like a sidekick and all the rest of it. You were right. I get it. And I'm sorry.
I realized I was almost shouting.
I'm here because I need your help. Uncle Joe is hurt. He fell down on the beach, and I'm pretty sure he has a broken leg.
The anger slid from Abby's face. She peered at me. Is this another one of your games? I shook my head. He's really hurt?
Yes! He's collapsed on the rocks in the rain, unconscious.
Unconscious?
Abby's shovel clattered to the ground. We have to rescue him. Why do you think I'm here? I said,
but she was already racing for the sofa.
Okay, that went better than I'd expected.
So, what's your plan? Asked Abby as I crowded after her into Fort McFortersen.
Well, first we need to get him inside, I said. And then we'll just have to...
Wait, said Abby. Are you serious? If Joe's really hurt, there's no way we can do this on our own. We need to get my dad or someone. We need an adult.
You know we can't bring grown-ups in, I said. It's against Nafafa rules. They'll shut us down and then Uncle Joe will be trapped up there without any help at all.
But this is a real emergency, said Abby. And, hey, didn't Noriko say? She cleared her throat and looked up at the blanket ceiling. Okay, so we, the members of Camp Pillowfort, are hereby declaring a genuine, actual medical emergency. Yes.
What are you doing?
Telling the council. Noriko said we could only break the rules for life or death emergencies, and this should definitely count.
Brilliant,
I said, wishing I'd thought of it.
That changes things. So where can we find...
We both jumped as the pillow to Fort Comfy flopped open.
Oh, honestly, Samson, said Abby as the cat ambled in. You always have to make an entrance, don't you?
Samson danced around happily, dodging Abby's hands and getting caught on everything until he came to the link to the alley fort. He stopped dead, sniffing furiously, and dropped into a crouch.
Huh, said Abby.
Maybe he smells Mr. Chompers.
He definitely smells something, I said, as Samson began pawing at the pillow.
Abby grabbed him around the middle. All right, time to go home, Mr. Director. No rat fights allowed in other people's forts.
But Samson wasn't in the mood to be grabbed.
Stop squirming, said Abby. We've got an emergency here, buddy. Ow! Hey!
Can I help? I asked.
No, I got this. He's just stuck on... Ow!
Abby? You okay?
Said a new voice. We froze. Abby's head snapped up. It was one of her brothers.
I'm fine, she yelled, throwing herself into the open link, Samson twisting in her arms. Don't come in!
But there was a swoosh of fabric and a whoosh of air, and Mark's head and shoulders appeared in the entrance to Fort Comfy, the tassels of Abby's scarf brushing his face. He looked at Abby, then passed her to the open link. He blinked. He frowned. He turned his head.
Hey, Matt! He yelled. Get in here!
No! Said Abby, but it was too late. There was a pounding of footsteps, and Matt appeared, squeezing his way in next to Mark.
He blinked and frowned just like his brother, then settled on an identical open-mouthed stare. They looked adorable. Abby went on the offensive.
What do you think you're doing?
She demanded, unhooking Samson from her shirt.
How dare you come in my fort without permission?
You yelled, said Mark. But what's going on here?
Nothing, said Abby firmly.
I didn't move a muscle. Maybe Abby could talk her way out of this. Maybe they would forget what they'd seen.
Matt, peering over Abby's shoulder, crinkled his eyebrows at me through the link.
Really?
He said.
'Cause this sure looks like something to me.
He tilted his head at me and waved. I couldn't help it. I waved back.
Ugh!
Abby heaved a dramatic sigh.
Come on, then, she said,
and she backed up into Fort McFortersen to sit beside me. Matt and Mark squeezed through Fort Comfy and piled together in the link, Mark on his stomach with Matt leaning on his shoulders. They were so close I could have reached out and ruffled Matt's hair. It was hard not to.
So why are you two checking on me? Asked Abby, glaring at her brothers. Where's Dad?
First, tell us what's going on here, said Mark.
Abby gave an actual tisk sigh.
You guys, it's fine. It's just this thing. Magic pillow forts or whatever, get over it. So, where's Dad?
Matt grinned at her.
Thanks. Dad's out on a date with Tamal. He won't be home until late. He left us in charge since you're grounded.
And I heard you yelling, said Mark. So I came to make sure you were okay.
So here we are, said Matt.
Yes, said Abby. And it's nice to see you, but Maggie and I are in a hurry. We're on a rescue mission, and unless one of you knows how to heal broken bones...
Broken bones?
Said Mark.
Who's got broken bones? Asked Matt.
No one you know.
Oh, okay, said Mark. So what's our plan?
Are you asking if you can help? Said Abby.
Because you're not exactly in charge here.
They can help, I said.
They can? Said Abby.
Yeah. With the news that Alex wasn't around, an idea was coming together in my mind. There really was only one obvious solution. It was time to be decisive.
Okay, everyone, I said, clapping my hands. Here's what we're doing. Matt and Mark?
But my explanation got cut off as a pillow popped out of the wall beside me, and a young kid I'd never seen in my life appeared, silhouetted in the light and bustle of the Nefafa hub.
Maggie Hetzker?
Said the kid, reading from a clipboard.
Pheasant!
I snapped, raising my hand. Abby snorted. The kid looked up.
Ben from the council would like to know if this is actually a true, legitimate emergency.
I could have screamed in frustration. I might have.
Yes!
I said, snatching up the loose pillow and strangling it.
What is wrong with you people? This is a real, actual, life-and-death emergency, and we are dealing with it whether anyone on that darn council likes it or not.
The boy looked shocked. He almost dropped his clipboard.
And you tell Ben from me,
I barreled on, closing the distance between us,
that if he shuts down one single link in this network before Uncle Joe is safe, I will catch the next bus to the Midwest and search under every pillow on every sofa until I find him. And he will not be pleased to see me.
And I slammed the link shut in his face.
Ugh,
I said, turning back to the others. Abby was goggling at me. Mark whistled. Even Samson looked impressed.
Guess we know who's in charge around here, then,
said Matt, grinning. I felt my face turn scarlet.
So, like I was saying, I said, Matt and Mark, you two go up to Alaska and stand guard over Uncle Joe. We'll tell you how to get there.
Got it, said Matt.
When you say Alaska,
began Mark, but Abby put her hand in the air.
What about me? She asked.
I looked at her. Things had been really weird between us, but this next stage was going to be tricky, and I needed her brains and bravery and friendship more than ever.
We, I said, are going through to Kelly's fort, Abs.
We're going to get my mom.
20. Kelly had made some changes to her fort since